American media is a business, and it has a mission. Not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men and indoctrinate citizens with a capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now, for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
And a good day. This is Sean Kennedy reporting to you from the internet for Monday, March 7th, 2005. This would be Newsreel, your source for independent media news that will give you the edge you need against the core political tyranny that is trying to enslave you. If you happen to be one of those misfits who don't happen to believe that core political tyranny is trying to enslave you, I firmly suggest you get a firm grip on reality, my good friend, because it won't be long before they put you in a camp. You don't think so? Well, I got a lot of news that says otherwise. Our rights are slowly going out the window. And, well, actually, to be honest, no, that's not true. They're not slowly going out the window. They're rapidly going out the window. And there's not a lot we can do about that right now, except for inform ourselves, because information is power. And therefore, the more you know, the stronger you are, and the greater you will be able to resist. You can read all the stories along with me by going to my live journal. And you know it will be time to turn the page when you hear me say something to the effect of plug in, download, and ramp up. We need to arm ourselves with information, ladies and gentlemen. All of you out there in radio land or internet land, data land, broadcast land, who listen to these transmissions, know that it is, in fact, imperative that we all take responsibility for our own education, that we all check some of the news, and that we, in fact, stand up for what we believe in, not just as Canadians, not just as Americans, not just as denizens of whatever country you're in, but as citizens of the world, as peace-loving, freedom-loving citizens of the world. It is imperative. And I am going to do my part with this broadcast in order to help you out, and hopefully you'll be able to do your part, too. Got some feedback here from people doing their part. Go with me on this for a moment, Sean. Dear Sean, starts with Dear Sean, go with me on this for a moment. Tell me what you come up with. Now, this was a really good email, so I'm going to read this to you. Put these topics together. Terrorist threat, right, plus hackers, plus the U.S. military, plus unmanned armed military robotic platforms. Now, for those of you who have been, unless you've been living under a rock, you know that they're sending these remote control drones out into combat with guns on them and stuff like this, okay? Now, this is all Gen 1 stuff. Now, personally, I don't think these remote, so-called robots, which they're not robots, okay? They're remotes, okay? A robot would have to be autonomous. So it would have to not have anyone else controlling it in order for it to be a robot. So it's not a robot. But, you know, the media, they don't actually check anything. They just fucking throw the label robot on it. And who cares, right? Who's going to know the difference? Except for those of us out there that actually know what a robot is. And it's not a robot. So that's okay. It's a remote. And I don't think they're particularly that useful, but they are rolling out there that we got, you know, these remotes with the guns on them and all that. The more we dig, the more we find out. A, the military personnel are wanting to be home with mom and dad. Recruiting in all four branches of the U.S. military currently is at an all-time, is at an all-time 30-year low and looking very bleak. True, because we're declaring war on the world, we're trying to be policing the planet, and it's just not really working out for us. B, the U.S. military is ambitiously attempting to establish a new tech military machine by 2010, coincidentally the year after George W.'s second term in office has ended. And that'll be right about the time that his brother from Florida, the governor of Florida, will be taking over office. That's my prediction. I'm going to go way out and say that his brother is going to be the president, and there's not a goddamn thing any of us can do about it. Prove me wrong! Prove me wrong. I think the black box voting will be so entrenched by then that there's no fucking chance, not a prayer, that we're going to get anybody else in there. Maybe I'm wrong. Hey, yeah, you were wrong on that one, Sean. I will be happy to be wrong, okay? I will be happy, happy, happy to be wrong, but I don't think I am. Now, C, the new tech military has a huge plan for unmanned armed fighting machines. Okay, a lot of advantages to these. You don't get any pesky Veterans Affairs. You know, they can't report on atrocities, all sorts of good stuff with having unmanned fighting machines. D, hackers are known for their tenacity to dig out information and get into systems. E, terrorism has been established as the single most global threat to the current world state of affairs. Now, keep up. F, the fear of God has been placed into all nations around the world from the threat of either terrorists or the United States, or both. G, for the new military to be secure, there cannot be people out there with the desire and skill to somehow access these new military systems. See what's going on here? Friend or foe, someone breaching the security control format at these systems is a threat to the United States. So assuming the role of the new U.S. military will be that of a good and honor, there will be fewer human individuals in control of the powerful unmanned forces. Those individuals will have to be in control via radio communications because those unmanned crafts are mobile and need to be directed once an engagement has begun on a foreign soil. Even encrypted radio two-way communication can be thwarted. The danger hackers pose is the ability to access those systems. The Pentagon, satellites, and unmanned robotic army, much of it can conceivably be controlled remotely, like a global-controlled chessboard video game. How many satellites, if any, are civilian-controlled? I don't think there's many at all, actually. Well, there's the telecommunications ones, right, which are belong to telecommunications companies. But, I mean, realistically, they've got the anti-satellite warfare up there to just shoot down any satellites they don't want to have up there. Passing laws to secure that military machines will be a breeze. Almost automatic because it's the only logical way to the public that you don't want to have security breaches. So you see what I'm saying? Like, if you want to pass laws to make hacking totally illegal, right, because you have to have these anti... You can't have anyone with any kind of hacker interest. You have to totally destroy the hacker in order for this new military machine to be functional. You don't want terrorists, synonymous with hackers now, cracking into the military machine and turning it on innocents in our own country. And that was from Falware. He sent me that in. Who, incidentally, was the fellow who did the time in Desert Storm, and I gave that to Ricky Rocket, who since said, whoa, I wasn't ever in no war. That wasn't me. I don't know who that was. It was Falware. Sorry about that, Falware, but we already talked about it. But I just want to give credit where credit is due. And, of course, this is something that, you know, when they start vilifying even a mindset, when they say the hacker mindset is evil, and we see it all the time. Why do you want to know this? And, you know, it's subtle right now. Oh, yeah, you got nothing better to do than hang out in your parents' basement and, like, learn how to crack systems? What the fuck's wrong with you? Well, you know, personally, I think that when the United States government turns these robotic machines on its own people, which will happen, people say, no, it'll never happen. You're just being paranoid. Dude, they're already turning the army on their own people, okay? We've already got protesters who are being incarcerated. You know, you got Donald Rumsfeld with his secret police SS division that's legally allowed to do extra legal activities, i.e. geek people in the sleep, you know, all the good Suicide Squad stuff. You know, all that good, you know, Section 9, Splinter Cell, killing to protect the greatness of America, that whole thing. You know, that's all legal now, according to Donnie's new special service group he's got. So, is it so inconceivable that the United States eventually would just have the minority who controls all the cash, controlling the military, which of course has no people, or very few people, on the ground, and then you've got the robotic gun platforms, which, you know, keep all the herds in line? I mean, this is not really that far from the truth, or do you think it is? I mean, realistically, do you think I'm wrong here? I don't think so. This is all very, very feasible stuff. On to the advice portion of the show. Sort yourself out. If you have any questions or any kind of thing that you want advice on, anything at all, send it to me. I will give it the good college try and see if I can give you some pertinent information. Give me about anything from sexual gender to drug use to, hand loading. I don't know much about hand loading, so I can't really... Well, I can put it out to the web. You know, I mean, there's not much we can't really look at. That's the power of the internet, is that our individual knowledge is insignificant compared to the knowledge of all of our peers when we all work cooperatively towards something. This is why, of course, you know, the powers that be are terrified of the internet and those of us on the internet that we do not organize. Because the minute we organize, the minute we have the ability to actually have some sort of cohesion, brotherhood, solidarity, all of these counterculture groups on the web, the minute that happens and we stop fighting with each other, when we stop having flame wars, when we stop acting like fucking children, when we actually do get organized, there's not a force on the planet that can stand up to us because we will be, in effect, well, just by... the distributed computational power, a force to be reckoned with. You know, and the degree of that force is, well, it would remain to be seen depending on how many people we get on board. But there's been more than just me who's theorized that if we were to all get together, boy, we could really change the world. And here's hoping. You know, but anyway, on to sort yourself out. Dear Sean, for the last few weeks, I've been trying my hardest to keep myself on a schedule for exercise. A question came to my mind during a mile run, which happens to me a lot. It's like meditation. How do you keep yourself going? I try my hardest to keep myself interested in personal development. While I do well mentally, my physical fitness, on the other hand, is lacking. Very common. Don't feel bad. My schedule I had set up was one that I would start running about a mile or two and work up from there. That's pretty ambitious. After I would begin using the weightlifting center, which is free due to some social engineering, and which goes along with today's Daily Hack, incidentally. And I just seem to find it hard to keep on schedule for running. In short, I guess I'm asking, how can I improve my workout schedule and still have time to go to school, work, and improve mentally? And that's from Slycat. Okay, first of all, you must be setting realistic goals for yourself. And there is no steadfast system. First of all, you must be utilizing a scheduling program, like something like, I guess, Palm has a free one you can download, and it's meant to use with their programs, but you can, like, run it on your PC and get a schedule format out, print it out on a sheet if you don't have a Palm Pilot. I use a wristwatch. I use the Reputer, also called the on-hand computer, as I covered in Patrolling. The reason why I do that is because I put a daily list of things I want to accomplish on there, and then I alarm certain events at certain times. If I need to remember to call somebody a certain time or tell my wife some pertinent information or whatever, I just alarm it. So that during the day, these alarms go off, and I know that there's something that I need to be reminded of, I check my watch, and there it is. I don't like using a Palm or any of the other handhelds because you put the handheld in your pocket, you can't hear the alarm go off, it's a big pain in the ass. That said, though, the on-hands do have problems where, I mean, it's a big bulky watch, man. I mean, no matter how much you like it, it is a big bulky watch. There's some other watches coming on the market, maybe that might be something you want to look at. Now, also, you must also bear in mind that there is no... do the schedule, live the schedule. It's about tweaking. If you fail, now this is something also that our culture, we're like, oh, if I fall off track, it's all, no, that's good. That's good. If you fall off track, that's good. But what's important is that you write down why you fell off track. I was too tired. Good. Write that down. I was too tired here. And then you look at your schedule at the end of the week and you go, okay, I failed here, 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 and here. Why did I fail in these places? The reason why I failed in these places, and that's not a dirty word. Failure is not a dirty word. You cannot grow unless you fail. Okay, so you look at this week and you go, okay, where did I fall down here? I didn't run this morning because I couldn't get my ass out of bed because I was too tired. Well, you're not giving yourself enough time for sleep. You know what I mean? You've got to make sure that you factor for these things and stick to your schedule. Now, there are things that happen where, your schedule gets blown out. Something happens, your car breaks down, and suddenly you can't get to the gym. Okay, that's fine. That's fine. You should move to the next events in sequence, try to handle things. Things go wrong, okay? Damage control. Life is damage control. You have to be able to kind of keep up, try to, every day is new, try to keep going, try to keep happening. Personally, you run in the morning before you eat, because if you run in the morning before you eat, it's 500% more effective than if you run after you eat. So if you run a mile, say, which is long, I mean, just lug your ass a mile, okay? Get around. Doesn't have to run the whole way. Just go around a mile. Okay, and then, and then when you get back, you can eat and stuff. But if you do it before you eat, it's the equivalency of running 5 miles if you'd already eaten. So that's where, and I lost 40 pounds doing it that way. And you don't have to, totally slog it out. You don't have to, totally break your back. It's got to be enjoyable. It's got to be a little bit of work there, true. But, if it's totally, hell on earth every time you exercise, well, that's not going to be very encouraging, is it? Also, you've got to make sure that you have realistic goals. Make sure you're getting enough sleep. I'm trying to get that sleep thing down right now. I'm finding about 7 to 8 hours a night is usually pretty good. It should probably be 8 hours, but, I've got a lot of stuff I want to do, so I'm trying to weasel it back a little bit to 7 hours. And if you fail, don't feel bad. You must remember this, because if you fail, you're like, oh, man, this sucks. I don't want to do this anymore. No. You're growing. You're growing. If you fail, that's important. You cannot have progress without failure. So learn to appreciate it when you fall down a little bit, and just have the mental discipline, okay? It's all about tweaking. It's all about figuring out where your schedule went wrong. Tweak it, tweak it, tweak it. It takes you about a month to get it up to speed. So what? In 6 months, finally you got to work a bit. Now you're running every day. That's your goal, right? You want to make sure you got your exercise regime. I still haven't got mine down perfectly. I still haven't got time to read and do everything all perfectly. But whose fault is that? It's my fault. I haven't stuck to the discipline. So that's okay. That's okay. We just got to focus a little bit more, try to get a system down. And once you do something for 21 days, if you were to get up and say every morning for 21 days, after 21 days, it becomes a habit. And then you'll wake up and go like, I need to go for a run, but I haven't gone for a run. But now you find yourself wanting to go for a run. Isn't that a scary concept? Well, when you want to go for a run, that's a good thing. Right? I mean, it shows that your body's trying to get the metabolism up. And when you run in the morning, of course, there's a whole bunch of the perks that come from that. The metabolism gets up, your body metabolism processes food better, you feel better, you're more awake. It's very, very cool. But remember, the price of choice is discipline. If you want to have choice, you have to have discipline. If you do not have discipline and you have freedom, eventually your freedoms will be taken from you if you do not exercise the discipline. Okay, so this is very, very important. Also, a lot of people give a shit, as geeks, nerds, freaks, whatever, wogs, because we have all this crazy kit. We got the wristwatch computers. We got the palm pilots. We got all the tech everywhere. And the reason why we are able to do the things we are able to do is because we utilize technology. Many people do not even utilize technology. How many people out there have got handheld computers and they don't actually use them? You know what I mean? Sure, maybe they got their address lists in there or whatever, but they don't utilize the schedule. They don't use the calendar. They don't utilize the technology that is available to them. Never mind acquiring new stuff. Just utilize the technology you already have. If you can just do that, that's what sets you apart from the rest of the sane people. Because if you can just utilize the technology that's available to you, so many people don't utilize it. I mean, be honest. Be honest. Do you utilize all the technology that you have, say, in your palm or on your computer? No, you don't. No, you don't. Chances are you're playing video games. Me, personally, I don't do the expense stuff in my wristwatch. Why not? Well, I just don't get around to it, I guess. Maybe I don't see a need for it, but I do use the schedule. I do use the phone list. You know, there's no perfect. It's just do the best you can and try to improve. That's the best part about this is you'll never be finished. You'll never be perfect. That's fantastic. That means there's always the potential for growth. And no one's better than everyone else. Everyone's just kind of on a journey. We're all going in one direction to try to make ourselves better human beings and, you know, sort of mentally, physically, spiritually, if you want to call it that, evolve into, you know, eventually a massive cybernetic consciousness with MDC and power armor and mecha. And that's my religion. Sure, we'll go with that. Moving straight on to the... I hope that helps out, by the way, Sly Class. Moving straight on to hacking the iPod in the news. Computer euthanasists have worked out how to reprogram Apple's iPod music player with their own code using an ingenious acoustic trick. Now, this is kind of cool. They've adapted the component that generates clicks or squeaks as the user scrolls through on-screen menu in order to extract vital information from the latest generation of the device. Now, I don't have one of these things, so I don't know how that all works, but apparently this is what happens. This allows them to install an alternative operating system and make their iPods run games and other new programs. Now, bear in mind, an iPod has got like, you know, what do they got, like 40 gigs, 50 gigs on them now? I mean, that's some serious space on there. The project began with Nils Schneider, a 17-year-old computer science student from Germany, received an iPod for Christmas, and it was all downhill from there. Unlike most new iPod owners, he decided to install Linux, a freely available computer operating system not used as in standard iPods on his device. Yes, the Penguin Nazis will save us all. The existing version of Linux for the iPod would not install easily, however, as the latest generation of player features new hardware. Undeterred, Schneider decided to figure out how these components work by himself. He found that he could control some parts of the device but not those containing details about the way the unit starts up, which is vital to getting Linux installed. Instead of going through the usual process of trial and error to work out the code, Schneider realized that listening to it could provide a shortcut. Bernard Leach, a UK software engineer who helped set up the so-called iPod Linux project, had already worked out how to control the piezoelectric component within the iPod that produces the click. To decipher the bootloader code, the program which allows the iPod to start up, Schneider decided to use Leach's system to play the bootloader code as a sound. I just tried to encode a single byte as a click sound with the different spaces between the clicks, Schneider told New Scientist. It seems to work, but it was slow, so I played around and the code found out how to make the clicks faster. That is such a cool story because you got a 17-year-old kid who just by himself, okay, with a little bit of help from some friends all over the web, you know, digital brethren and all the rest of it, he figured out how to circumvent the entire iPod setup. He just figured out how to take this piece of hardware. Thanks for the hardware. I'm now going to gut it because it's mine. I own this. I'm going to put some free operating system on it, and we're going to go from there. I think that is brilliant, and that gives me so much hope. Where one 17-year-old kid, okay, was able to do that, man, there's hope for the future. If he can do that, who's to say that there's anything that cannot be cracked and hacked? There's hope for us all. Yeehaw. Now, we got some phone virus update stuff. If you haven't been able to keep track of this because you haven't been listening to Newsreel, if this happens to be your first show, which I highly doubt, but thank you so much. If this is your first show, quickly go find the other shows, download them. Well, or you just stick with us tomorrow. You know, you'll keep up. You'll know what's going on. Don't worry. The WOGs are here for you. Now, the phone viruses, of course, are these Bluetooth-enabled things that are skipping around and fucking up everybody's phones. And everyone's really upset about this. Oh, my God. I think the first one was developed in Spain. They've been sighted now, dun-dun-dun, in the wild in California, which is kind of freaky, but there it is. And we got an update here. You are about as likely to get hit by a falling piano as you are to get a virus on your mobile phone, says Graham Kalui. Kalui? Says Graham. a security consultant with UK antivirus firm Sophos. Unlike PCs, phones simply have too many different operating systems for viruses to exploit, he says. Wow, dude, you never should have said that, because now that's in writing. You give this 3 years and it's going to be a major problem. I prophesy. And there are too few people who own the smartphones capable of receiving and transmitting new software, like a virus, to pose a real risk. Wow, you're making some really big, sweeping, no-foresight statements here there, Graham. Reading the newspapers last week, you may have gotten the opposite impression. On 21 February, reports surfaced that the first two U.S. phones had been infected with a virus outside the lab, sparking predictions of a bleak future in which viruses run rampant, rendering cell phones useless as PCs hit by Lovebug, Sasser, and MyDoom. The phone virus, called Kaber, was written by a band of European hackers who call themselves the 29A Group. They wrote it in June 2004 as a proof-of-concept virus designed to show that phones can suffer viral attacks just like PCs. It first appeared last August in the Philippines on phones running the Symbian 60 operating system, including top-of-the-range Nokia, Siemens, and Panasonic models. The virus drains phone batteries far faster than normal by constantly seeking active Bluetooth radio connections in nearby cell phones. When the finds a phone with Bluetooth switched on, in so-called discoverable mode, it asks the user if they want to receive a file. If the user agrees, the virus transmits a file called Carib and asks the user if they want to install it. Enough people have done so, the virus has spread to a further 11 countries, including the UK, Australia, and the United States. But you got nothing to worry about. Nothing to worry about there. Okay, you know, no. This isn't going to be a problem. Please keep buying new phones that have the technology, because this obviously isn't a problem. And I'm not getting paid by any of the companies to say this. I'm not making sure that I'm going to get all friendly with these companies. I'd like to see if this guy gets contacted by phone companies from now on, because he's going to be like a little private contractor. He wants to give, you know, some professional advice to encourage people to buy new phones. Come on now. This is pretty obvious. There's obviously a problem here. We've got these viruses hitting phones, and it's something that people need to be aware of. I mean, don't spread FUD, but obviously if it's just in a couple of months, travel to four different countries, I'd say that's a fucking issue. Just call it me. I don't know. Maybe I'm way out of line here. And somebody who is out of line is this anti-video game bill they got on the books. A bill under consideration in Washington State would hold video game developers accountable for violent acts ostensibly inspired by a particular game. Now, personally, I hope this gets voted through the floor, because if they vote on this for video games, what's next? Books? Movies? You know? Oh, we can't read these books because they promote violence. Currently under review by the state legislature, House Bill 2178 would hold game retailers and manufacturers accountable for injury or wrongful death committed by a person under the age of 17 if a game was a factor in creating conditions that assisted or encouraged the perpetrator. Now, this is just fucking insane. While the bill is still in committee stage and is far from becoming law, note, its dramatic interpretation of criminal responsibility reflects growing concern about the contrary and about concerning controversy about the effects of violent video games. Now, you got guys out there claiming up and down. Now, it's true that video games do desensitize people. This is true. But it's a far, far cry from desensitization to dropping the hammer on someone. Okay? They did the same thing with role-playing games. Role-playing games are evil. They encourage kids to kill. Bullshit. Seattle ABC affiliate Como quotes the bill supporter Bill Hansen of the Washington Police and Sheriff's Association. Well, Bill, you're completely fucked. Quote, if you sit up and watch this and play these games over and over again, it seems that this is all right to walk up and hit a police officer over the head with a bat. Okay, dude, I probably think that, you know, you need to really clue into reality here. I mean, these cops, this poor, poor cop, poor Bill Hansen, you know, he's completely lost touch with reality. The poor guy. Somebody needs to give him a hug and probably like an 8. Needless to say, opponents of the bill point out that it simply shifts blame away from the person who actually commits the crime. Holy shit, let's not make people accountable. Further, the connection between violent video games and actual violence, the controversial parallel is similar furor over violent films and television, remains tentative at best. Yeah, you can bet, because the religious right's going to use this, okay? Because they've been trying for fucking years. They've been trying for years to censor art, to censor music, to censor film. So now the latest form of art is what? Video games. So what are they moving in on? Video games. Nothing new there. Look at that. And when the next thing comes out, when virtual reality gets a little bit more mainstream and everybody's wearable, they'll be jacking on that. Dreaming's bad. Violent dreams are bad. Report all violent dreaming. Fuck. Games sold in the United States carry the ESRB rating codes, warning parents of potentially objectionable material. Well, what the fuck? you know, when you got a video game like, okay, Mercenaries Playground of Destruction, what do you suppose the fucking game's about? You know what I mean? It's obviously a game, you know, Mercenaries Playground of Destruction, a ping pong scenario. Like, don't give me that shit. Okay? It's just like, and like, you want to read some violent shit? Go read some Tarzan. Okay? Go check out the cartoons, you know, the good cartoons, like Warner Brothers, Daffy Duck, Elmer Fudd, shooting the rabbit in the face, all the rest of it. You know, and kids weren't running around with shotguns going, boom. They weren't doing that. All right? So just cut the shit, okay? I can't understand why it is that, like, it's generation after generation, they're pulling the same shit. When are they going to clue in here? Especially violent games are rated M for mature and are not intended for minors. Well, dude, you know, if you're so concerned about your children that you think they could play a video game and go absolutely fucking wild, whose fault is it? Is it the kid's fault? Well, it could be the kid's fault, but he's under 17, so we can't prosecute the child. So whose fault would it be then? It would be the parents. Because obviously, if their child was capable of picking up an axe and running around and fucking chopping people up, I would say the parents should be have a little bit more on the ball to make sure this stuff doesn't happen. Just a personal thought. Never mind, but no. We have to fuck over the game companies. Okay, then we should fuck over all the gun companies because they made guns that kill people. And we'll fuck over the publishers who publish books about, like, you know, American Psycho. Anyone read American Psycho? Bret Easton Ellis, amazing book. Go read it. Okay. Book's a little violent, though. I mean, he's chopping up kids in the book, you know. So you got to think, oh, my God, you know, we got to destroy that. We got to take that out. You know, we got to ban all these books, too. Deutschland, Deutschland, Uber. You know, come on. Come on now. Let's just try to get a little bit of reality here. People have to be accountable for their own actions. Everyone's got a brain. Everyone's got the power of choice. It's like, you know, these religious groups, God gave us power of choice, and all the churches are trying to take it away. Don't understand how that happens. Now, in stupid industry news, as if there was any doubt, the recording industry has shown once again that it is too greedy for its own fucking good. It's not enough that they're finally starting to make money from music downloads. They want more. They're currently making an estimated 65 cents per song download from iTunes and other online music services, but are trying to pressure them to pay more. When you consider the company's material costs are nil, and downloading an average CD costs the end user nearly as much as a hard copy of the album, unless you're buying them for fixed price rates and the industry was sued over, it's hard to see current prices as being unfair to the labels. In my opinion, this is from the article, if they were to keep the prices reasonable, the amount of sales would increase to a significant level within a few years. After all, CDs took a little time to catch on with the majority of music buyers. If things go the other way, I don't know if they will ever see improvement. The public's perception is being ripped off has contributed greatly to the widespread file sharing already. You know what? And it's not even that the public is getting ripped off. The artists are getting ripped off. Do you know how many artists have been fucked over by recording labels? Do you have any idea? Why do you think so many artists got their own labels, that they start their own fucking labels? It's not because they have this great, you know, thirsting drive to be in business for themselves. Sure, some of them probably do. But a lot of them do it because, you know, well, hey, you know, we're getting fucked over by these recording companies. You know, you got Marvel, you know, tried to fuck over Stan Lee for Spider-Man. It's just industry now. There's no trust. There's no honor. It's all about leverage and who's got guns in whose mouth. That's what the industry's about. It's fucked up. The RIAA claims the industry loses $4.2 billion every year to piracy. They claim that. There's no proof of that. They just fucking pick that number out of their ass. And worldwide, this includes bootleg CDs along with peer-to-peer sharing. While they don't list the net profits for the industry specifically, they claim the industry does $40 billion worth of business annually. I realize these figures mean very little, but 2% of $40 billion is $800 million, roughly 20% of what they claim they use to piracy. And the major source of this, $800 million, hasn't even been operating for a full year yet. To me, that sounds like a pretty good start, even for a greedy bunch of bastards. So you did $40 billion, and you're freaking out about $800 million. Dude, if I made $40 billion, I could lose $800 million in my car, and it wouldn't even fucking catch my attention. Universal and Sony BMG are reported to be, quote, reluctant to disrupt the market for downloads, end quote. So I guess they're not that intellectually challenged. You know, I mean, obviously, how do you suppose these musical artists, because there's a lot of art, you know, like, how the fuck do you hear about Slipknot? How much Slipknot do you hear played on the radio? Okay, and they're a mainstream band. You know, where's all the radio Slipknot? Where's all the KMFDM on the radio? You know, how are these groups supposed to get known if not for peer-to-peer file sharing, if not for people like me going out recommending, you know, a band on my show because it's in background music, like the music I got today, which kicks ass. You know, if you don't hear the music anywhere, how the fuck are you going to know how to buy it? And if you're a fan, okay, I am a fan of Ghost in the Shell. Everyone knows this. I've gone on about this, and Tank sent me a really pretty poster, which I've just gotten framed and now hanging on my wall with its own independent lighting, I might add. But honestly, if you are a fan of, you know, a particular media source, be it music, DVDs, whatever, okay, I don't have any burned Ghost in the Shell stuff. You come to my house right now, check it out. I've got limited edition. I've got all the limited editions up to 4. I don't have 5 yet. Don't buy me one, send it. I got it on order. But seriously, you know, you've got to have the original stuff, because when you're a fan, you want the good stuff. You don't want rips. You don't want burns. You know, you found what you liked. Now you've got the good stuff, and now you can go out and get it. Because before, you had to pay $40 for an independent album that maybe you liked because you sampled it in the store if they let you. And that's if you didn't have to order it in. It's hardcore, man. You have to like stand back and go, whoa, wait a second. You know, who are they actually losing money here? Or are they making money because of all the advertising that goes on by word of mouth? That's why how a lot of these bands make it. So realistically, and I'm not the only one who thinks so. There's a lot of people out there. We did a story on Friday, I believe, about that. So, you know, these recording industries are completely talking out their ass. Another people talking out their ass is China. China talks out their ass. China claims innocence. China is firmly opposed to the U.S. State Department report criticizing China's human rights situation without any reason. Well, if you're violating human rights, that would be the reason. Foreign Ministry spokesman Lo Jingchao said Wednesday. He made remarks when asked to comment upon the country reports on human rights practices released by the U.S. in Washington on Monday. Only the Chinese people themselves consider have the right to comment on the human rights situation in their own country. Well, they probably would comment on their own country there, Lou. But the problem is that you got all your country locked down. No one's got free speech. No one can express fuck all. If they do, they get charged with terrorism or dissent against the government. You lock them away in a jail cell somewhere, sell their fucking organs, shoot them, and charge their family for the bullet. That's how shit gets played in China. So, yeah, they have the right to comment on that. But no, they don't have the right to comment on that, because if they say shit against the government, they get shot. The Chinese government, sticking to a policy it calls putting people above everything else, yeah, that way they fall further, has made many efforts towards building a democratic country under the rule of law. That's a great line. Building a democratic country under the rule of law. Liu said, as a result, the Chinese people are now enjoying an improved situation in the terms of human rights. An improved situation? Why don't you just fucking not, you know, violating human rights? It's not that hard, dude. Liu said he hoped the United States would put more focus on its own human rights problems and work hard to resume the China-U.S. human rights dialogue and benefit bilateral exchanges. Well, dude, when you're selling the organs of people you put in jail, I think we have a little ways to go. Granted now, you know, the last thing I want is for America to get inspired by the shit that's going on in China and go, hey, you know, that's not a bad idea. That's not what I want. Okay, Uncle Sam with a scalpel going to the fucking maximum security is not really my idea of a good time. Just on a personal guideline, you know, I try to avoid that. The whole concept of, you know, we've already got secret police, we've already got all that happening, but, you know, at least we're not farming out our prisoners for their organs. We're farming them out to Dell to build computers. They've stopped doing that now. You know, we've got the forced labor camps going on, but at least we're not farming them for organs like they do in China. Now, on an upswing, though, the United States, this freedom is winning. I'm really happy about this story. The United States plans to drop its insistence on that a UN document on women's equality make clear that abortion is not a fundamental right. Okay? So what that actually says is that the United States wanted to say that women couldn't have pro-choice. I'm totally pro-choice. For those of you who are wondering, I'm all about pro-choice. I think, you know, I have no... Like, if I had something going on in my body, motherfucker, I'd want to be able to change that shit. So, you know, you can say what the fuck you please, but I'm all about pro-choice. That which means that if you want to have your baby because whatever, because you worship rocks or whatever, cool. Good on you. That's your choice. And I wouldn't want to take that away from you. But for me, you know, I want to make sure that women have the choice. That's just, you know, my own personal guidelines here. The Bush administration had demanded that a final draft include an anti-abortion statement, a proposal that plunged into controversy a two-week review session of the landmark 1995's Women's Conference in Beijing. Our original goal was to make sure that everyone involved knew what the original intent of the Beijing document was, says Richard Grinnell, spokesman for the U.S. mission to the United Nations. We are hearing from many delegations that they agree with us and advise that the amendment is therefore not needed. Negotiators to the conference said the White House, which opposes abortion at home and abroad, would drop the demand. So what they're saying here is that there is nothing in writing saying that they cannot have abortions. So that's actually a stroke for freedom. While we are pleased that so many other countries have indicated their agreement with this position, we anticipate that we can now focus clearly on addressing the many urgent needs for women around the world. In Beijing, abortion was treated as a health issue with a 150-page platform saying that it should be safe where it was legal and criminal action should not be taken against women who had abortions. Numerous delegates, especially from Europe, questioned why the United States was bringing up an issue. But Sowerberry said earlier that the U.S. position needed to be clarified because women's advocate groups were trying to hijack the abortion plank, and she did not name the fucking groups. So I think that provided we can, if we can keep logic and, a little bit of presence of mind about choice in the world. I mean, you got to bear in mind, too, the United Nations is the most nutless fucking organization in the world. Okay, they never did a goddamn thing in Rwanda. The whole Rwandan crisis happened. You know, you go read a book, Shake Hands with the Devil. There's a documentary about it, too, where the United Nations was stood by and idly watched the deaths of 800,000 innocent people in Rwanda. They just fucking said, whatever, you know, nothing we can do about it. Let's pull out the troops on the ground. Okay, there's troops there. But the UN went, nope, it's not genocide. No, it's not genocide. They got people driving around in trucks, radio stations telling them where, you know, members of the opposing tribes live. They're killing them with ricks, axes, picks, and hoes and shit. There's blood running through the streets. There's bodies washing into other countries because people are going fucking crazy committing genocide. But no one wanted to call it genocide. And, of course, it gets very little press, you know, but that's what the UN does. The UN is a fucking nutless organization, but at least it hasn't said that abortion is illegal. I mean, at least there's that to it. Now, here's a story that has just fucked the United States. You want to talk about something that will screw the espionage the community in the United States? This story here is so bad, I can't believe it's even in the mainstream news. But there it is, you know. You want to talk about getting your nuts cut off in the spy industry? Now's not a good time to be in an espionage, I'm here to tell you. A contractual agreement between the government and one of its spies is unenforceable in a federal court because of its absolute secrecy. The government needs for its espionage activities. The Supreme Court ruled Wednesday unanimously. The decision, with an opinion by Chief Justice William H. Rehnquist, overturned a federal appeals court ruling that permitted a lawsuit by two former Soviet bloc spies to go forward in federal court. The suit charged a breach of promise to provide a lifetime financial support had not gone to trial in federal court in Seattle, where the former spies, a married couple from an unnamed country, filed in 2000. Well, obviously, they're from somewhere in the Soviet Union. The government took the case to Supreme Court last spring, argued that even the need to respond to allegations of such a lawsuit posed a threat to national security by requiring an acknowledgement that espionage arrangement existed. So they're like, they go to these guys in the Soviet bloc country to say, listen, here's the fucking deal. You roll over for us. We'll get you out of the country. We'll bring you to the United States, and we're going to set you up for the rest of your lives. All we got to do is give us our data. We'll set up a partnership, yada, yada, yada. You come on into our team, and we'll look after you for the rest of your life. Deal. Well, okay, so they do it. They come to the United States, and the United States goes, nope, fuck you. We were lying. So they take him to court. And the court goes, nope, can't take him to court because it's spy stuff. So now, what incentive is there for any spy anywhere in the world to believe anything the United States says because it's not enforceable? They can't take him to court over the fucking deal. You know, as it stands, I mean, no one trusts the United States anyway. So this is just yet another story that this particular, like, think about it. If you were in the espionage field and you get approached by the United States and you know about this, and believe me, if I know about this, people whose business is the information warfare market, they're going to know about this. Okay. So you've just basically fucked the bargaining system. How much would it have cost you to set those two people up? Like what? You know, maybe a couple million, you know, for the duration, right? Give them a one lump sum. Here you go. Here's $2 million apiece. Have a nice fucking day. All right. But if you'd have done that, they would run the same story and all the spies around the world would be like, shit, man, the United States delivers when it says. But now they know they don't. So no one's going to bargain with the United States because they know they're going to squelch on the fucking deal. Come on now. Use your head, guys. You're wasting money six ways from Sunday, and you can't even look after your own accountability in the espionage field. That's ridiculous. Ridiculous. Now, if I'm really enjoying this hostage upgrade story. This is, you know, Quicken. Everyone knows about the Quicken. People who rely on older versions of Quicken to download their financial data from banks and brokerage firms must upgrade to Quicken 2005 or lose this time-saving feature, says publishers of the Personal Popular Finance Package. Now, this means that you bought our old one, but unless you give us more money, you're going to lose the product which you purchased, okay? in the letters and email messages it sent to its customer in late January, Intuit said it was ending online services and tech support for Quick in 2001 and 2002 as of April 19 to focus resources on enhancing our products, providing support for more current versions, which are now used by a vast majority of Quicken customers. Intuit estimates that less than 2% of Quicken's over 15 million users still run on 2001-2002 versions, but you can't trust those specs because they come from the company that has alternative. It's a conflict of interest to have them try to give you stats on whether or not they should be upgrading. But some users are complaining bitterly about having to upgrade just to maintain the functionality they now have. Yes, you paid money, even though you paid money 5 years ago, they paid good fucking money for this software, and now the company's turning the goddamn software off. I have 13 years worth of data in Quicken, and now they're telling me you have to upgrade to a new version that has limitations that you don't like and a user interface you don't like, or move to something that isn't as good, says Vic Roberts, a Burnt Hills, New York lighting technology consultant. He is unhappy that Quicken 2005 permits users to import transaction data, such as bank statements, only if their financial institutions offer support for Quicken's Web Connect or products or Quicken's Web Connect or Direct Connect features, such as the .OFX format. Quicken 2005 has dropped most of its product's long-standing ability to import transaction data in the .QIF file format. Program can still import credit card data, but next year's version will eliminate that feature as well. Banks must pay Intuit to be certified for OFX downloads into Quicken. Intuit says that almost 2,300 financial institutions, including most major banks and brokerages, support .OFX. But that doesn't mean they all do, and it's a huge power move money grab. That's all that is. Now, when you look at this, what are the implications of this? This should be illegal. They're turning off software that you purchased. Okay? So if they can do this, what's to stop Microsoft from going, nah, fuck it. Yeah, we're just going to turn off Windows 98. Next service upgrade, critical update you download, it's going to shut it off. You know, you have to upgrade to XP. And if you don't like it, that's just too fucking bad. Too bad if your computer's too old. Oh, well. Get with the program. Yeah, Quicken did it. We can do it, too. Follow the implications of this, man. This is some scary shit. I'm really worried about that because the software companies want to start using muscle. More and more reasons to go to open source. That's what I say. Now, we've got some subliminal black ice. Check this out. A pair of New York inventors believe they can thwart music pirates. You ready for this one? By secretly burying an anti-piracy warning in a track, which is revealed if the copyright has been abused. New Scientist reports on this. The warning, for instance, a voice from the record company Boss berating users for piracy, exploits the fact that the tones of a musical instrument consist of a complex pattern of randomly phrased harmonics. Inventors Mark Bako and Zeljko Ijvanjvic, whatever, Zeljko and Mark, tweaked a few harmonics to shift out of the pattern and use those shifts to convey a 20 kilobit speech message. Their patented idea is to incorporate a software decoder in file sharing applications, which encourages mass copying, are the bane of the music industry. The decoder would detect telltale phase shifts and convert them into the warning message, causing them to boom out through loudspeakers or headphones, the British Weekly reports in next Sunday's edition. For legitimate listeners, though, the digital shifts are so small that there's no difference at all in the perception of the music. Now, here's the problem, because there are audiophiles out there, okay, the guys who buy, you know, the $50,000 vacuum tube systems, okay, they're going to pick that shit up, all right? And if you, this is just asinine. You know, guys, come on, is it really worth it? I know these two, the Mark and Zeljko here, they're just trying to make a buck, but fuck, man. Can't you think of something a little bit better to do? Previously, attempts by researchers to bury anti-piracy signals into copyright music and films have run into countermeasures by hackers who filter out messages and also compatibility problems in players. So we're going to have that same problem again. But, you know, nice try. Nice try. Keep it coming, boys. You're doing good. I really enjoy what you're trying to do here, but you're wasting your fucking time because anything you can do, we can undo. Thanks for coming out. Now, the SAS, Special Air Service out of England, is going solo in Street Sam. Who didn't see this coming? If you have an internet technology, information technology group that is sponsored by the government, you train them up. There's lots of work in the private sector. What do? They bail out of the government. They go to the private sector. Very, very simple. You have a company that's got a bunch of highly trained people in a specialized field. There's the demand. They're going to jump ship. So that's what's happening with the SAS. We're getting the classic cyberpunk solo Street Samurai Ronin, you know, solo fucking work going on. A number of SAS troopers are leaving for lucrative jobs in the security industry. Reed Mercenary has prompted the regiment to write to all soldiers urging them to stay. You're not going to bullshit the SAS, okay? These guys are probably the who's who in the fucking zoo of hard ass. A letter from the regiment's headquarters has told all the SAS's 300 frontline soldiers it would be in everyone's best interest if they remained in the service. What the hell is that supposed to mean? An estimated 120 Special Air Service and Special Boat Service troops, the equivalency of the Navy SEALs over there, have left swapping junior NCO's wage for about £2,000 a month. That's what they make in the junior NCOs for the SAS. For as much as about £14,000 a month. So let's see, we've only got a 700% increase of in our wage working as security coordinators in Iraq and Afghanistan. The letter is said to have told soldiers to consider their loyalty to the regiment and kudos of being in the SAS. Well, that doesn't mean shit if you're not getting paid. You know, there's lots of guys with medals who are starving. This has always been an issue, an SAS soldier said yesterday. It's not the young ones that they're worried about. It's the senior NCOs who are so important because they're the guys with all the training. If they lose middle management, they lose all that experience for the future, and they're desperate to keep the keep that experience there. Well, why don't you start paying these guys what the fuck they're worth? If they're worth 14 grand in the open market, pay these people 14 fucking grand. One former 22nd SAS soldier is now working in security estimated that 120 formal... Pardon me. One former soldier working in security in Iraq estimated that 120 former Special Air Servicemen are now working in private security firms. So we're talking about nothing less than you've got guys going merc, and this happens all the time. I knew Canadians that went merc when they were in Bosnia, especially the Brits. The Brits know what the fuck's going on, okay? They've been at war for a long time. The Brits have been doing all this kind of shit. The SAS are arguably some of the most elite troops in the world. And yeah, if I was offered 14 grand because of my skill set to work privately, you're damn straight that's what I'm going to do, especially in a situation like what they got going over there. It's not a matter of if you've got the skill set, okay, you're a contractor, and that's what you do. And realistically, the kudos and the medals and the marching band and all that shit doesn't really add up to much. Okay, you've got to look after yourself, and you got to look after yours. That's just the way it is. So I say, why not? Fuck it. If I was SAS, I'd have done it too. And a really scary story about no more domain privacy. Check this out. I wonder if this would work if you would register your domain in Canada. Well, maybe we can sort this out here. The U.S. Commerce Department has ordered companies that administer internet addresses to stop allowing customers to register .us domain names using anonymous proxy services. The move does not affect owners of .com or .net domains, so who fucking cares? But apparently now .us cannot be registered anonymously. But it means that website owners with .us domains will no longer be able to shield their name and contact information from public eyes. The Electronic Privacy Information Center said the move violates First Amendment rights and anonymous free speech. And the representatives of one of the largest domain registration companies is concerned that customers who have been victims of stalkers won't be able to protect their privacy without changing their web address to a domain that offers anonymity. Well, obviously, you just fucked the .us domain name. Wired News has learned that the edict came a month ago from National Telecommunications and Information Administration, the Commerce Department agency that advises the president on telecommunications and information policy. The agency ruled that with no warning and without any discussion with the companies accredited to sell and register the .us domains, the domains companies were told they would lose their right to sell .us domains. So do this or you're out. The official top-level domain for the United States if they didn't comply. Well, isn't that just handy? Don't do this, you lose your abilities. Isn't that scary? Now, today's Daily Hack is part one of Hacker Tactics on Social Engineering, because really, there is no patch for human stupidity. Everyone should know how to talk their way out of situations. And more importantly, you should know when not to try to talk your way out of situations. You got to be able to gauge all this kind of stuff. This is an art, really. Social engineering is an art. I'm not bad at it because, you know, I can talk, as you no doubt tell. But I'm able to, you know, do some social engineering. When I was on my way to DEF CON, this is a true story, I was on my way to DEF CON, I walked into an Office Depot and I got them to give me web access on their main terminal. Just by asking. Just by doing that crazy, funky, magic shit I do. I was able to pull that off. Ask Enki. He was there for it. So was Sim. Now, social engineering is something that is a tool we can use, and usually honesty is the best policy. If you come across as an earnest, honest person, I don't think that people should be. I don't believe that hackers and these people who do this, I don't think that we're intrinsically evil. I believe hackers are the good guys. Okay, we're still young enough that we have, you know, those crazy things like ideals and morals and, you know, belief in right and wrong and all that kind of shit. We still believe in that. You know, so really, I don't think we're the threat. And realistically, we're fighting for the good guys. We are, in fact, the good guys. So I think social engineering is a skill that all of you out there in on the web should be able to, well, acquire. Even if you're, you know, the fat, sweaty nerd, if you can learn it, it can be done, you know. So check it out. Social engineering, very, very cool. And that was a link from, I think that was PolySci sent me that one. I'm just kidding. Yeah, PolySci sent me one. Thank you so much. And that's all I have for you today. But don't worry. Wow, did that go fast or what, hey? But don't worry, I'll be back tomorrow to make sure that you get all the information you need to stay alive in the coming tyranny that is upon us. This is a free broadcast. You can do with it whatever you see fit, and it's been brought to you by the generous donations of people who understand what it is to be free and to fight for freedom. And these people are Anonymous, Topek, Jesse, the Grey Ghost, Drake, Anthony, Robert, Dual Parallel, Anonymous, Michael, Andrea, Derek, Jesse, Susan, Eric, Tech Freak, Keith, Malcolm, Peter, Forleet, Timor, Peter, Plasmonic Grid, Christopher, Rosalie, Richard, Matt, Greg, WebLife, Evan, David, Brian, Austin, Brian, Jonathan, Adam, Host Mojo, Mainframe, Mark, Jonathan, Trevor, Brandon, Helgon, Art, Diremude, Brandon, Justin, Matthew, Lars, Eric, Anonymous, and Jason. And we got new subscribers. Some of these people I just read out, some of them are subscribers. Some of them are one-time cash donations, and that's great. Thank you so much. But the people who subscribe are really the lifeblood of the show. People who, you know, subscribe every month, because it gives me at least some kind of sense of security that I'm not going to starve to death. But, you know, honestly, anyone who can, even if you send me a nickel, you know, I'm not trying to belittle anybody here. Please don't think that's what I'm trying to do. It's just that I do know people who subscribe, and the new subscribers this month are Kevin, Steve, Philip, Steve, Charles, Matt, Brandon, Kevin, and Mark. Thank you so much, guys, for your belief in me and to everyone for donating. And if you'd like to help keep this daily news broadcast on the air to get you the information you need, please visit rantmedia.ca and click on the donate tab. And, of course, to those other people who are able to give me some data, those are those hard net runners like Astrofix, Sylvanus, PolySci, Ricky Rocket, Foulweir, that hard-ass guy, Psychofish, No Delete, Robo Christian, great fucking name, Soab, Bucky Fuller, Bonsai Poppy, Nightfall Gemini, Purdin, Madar, and Druid Y, Simru. How do you fuck do you say your name, guy? Can you, like, send me a pronunciation on that? Because I'd really like to know. Digital Baptisms. Now, this is what I'm really happy about. The Family Car, you know who you are. The Family Car guy is now, your Family Car is now known as a Tachikoma. Thanks for coming out. And I went and checked out Patty's Art Show the other night, so that was a lot of fun. I didn't see anybody else there, but it was cool. I had a good time. And for everyone who sent me information, and sorry I haven't been able to send all the emails back, I'm working on it. The emails are getting higher, which means more people listening to the show, which means that we are winning the war. Thank you so much for all your emails. If you've got any pertinent information or questions, or you want to be digitally baptized, or personal information on, you know, sort yourself out, please email newsreel, that's N-E-W-S-R-E-A-L, at rantradio.com. Now, if you like the music in the background, this is very cool. It's a split CD, which I haven't seen too many of these around, but it's really, really cool. They got two bands making one CD. The CD was called Iconoclast, and I couldn't really find a good link from my page, so I linked as best I could. It's by Spacewalkers Entertainment, and it's got both Spacewalker and Cynic, the two bands on this CD called Iconoclast. Very, very cool. I recommend picking it up. So if there's nothing else that I can think of to say to you, which there's not, I'll have to say, until tomorrow, that's what server said. End of line. Демоны кружили надо мной, рассекали тьму.
Thank you.